And Alan Weissman is staying on with us a little bit longer into open lines coming up here. So we'll just carve out a little open lines time for Alan Weissman to continue our conversation about the world without us. Couldn't help but think about his book when I was watching the movie I Am Legend last weekend. And we were just getting to a very interesting question. And then your calls. We'll get them all in here next. I'm trying to get online right now, get the blog up. That'll include all of the items from Crypto News and a couple of links I thought you might find interesting if you're looking for some last-minute gift suggestions of books. I have some friends who are authors, and I threw their links up and the titles of their books up on the blog, which I should get to coming up sometime during this break, and that'll be there for the rest of all time. Even in a world without us, that blog will be there, I hope, so that you can access that information. And we'll wrap up our conversation with Alan Weissman next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. What would things be like in a world without us? That's the premise of the book from Alan Weissman. And we'll get to a couple of callers hanging on right away. But I hated to interrupt your thought as you were talking about the question you posed for yourself at the top of the hour. Do you want to pick it up there, Alan?
Well, you know, the question is, would some other primate leap into our niche? Would any other creature leap into our niche if we weren't there? And it turns out that if it were a primate, and there's no telling that it would be, because each time the world has gone through an enormous extinction, you know, like when asteroids have hit it or huge volcanic eruptions, you know, for millions of years, as in the Permian extinction, which wiped out 90% of the species, you know, each time the world has come back with just new surprising stuff that didn't exist before, so there's just no way of telling. But if it were a primate, the best candidate seems to be the baboon, because it's the only other primate that has adapted to live in savannas as well as forests. Chimpanzees are happy in the forest. I don't know why they'd want to leave. But frankly, I went to look at baboons in Africa for this book, both in the forest and in the savannas, and they're also having a pretty good time too. I mean, would they really want to do what we're doing? I mean, do they want to take on mortgages?
It's really
an open question whether what we have done ultimately is all that successful. I mean, there's no question that the past couple hundred years have been this bright flame, and we have just done wonderfully fascinating stuff. But is the flame going to burn out really quickly, or is it going to have the longevity that some of these species, you know, like turtles, they've been around for a couple hundred million years. They're really successful compared to us.
Yeah, I was online for the better part of about 3 hours today on the phone and online with a customer service representative for a particular thing I sure won't get into, but 3 hours. And I kept looking over at my dog, who's having the time of his life today, and I'm in the fourth ring of hell trying to get this thing worked out. It was killing me.
Well, I rest my case.
Yeah, but let me ask you then about that question I threw out at the top of the hour. What about a world without most of us? What about a world where there 10% of the human population exists right now?
Well,
we're there.
I'm glad you asked the question. You know, I wrote this book, The World Without Us, by theoretically wiping us out in the beginning. You know, either some Homo sapiens-specific virus takes us, or we get all raptured away to heaven or to some, you know, zoo across the galaxy by aliens, just to show how nature has the capacity to come back so splendidly, and how it would go about doing it in dismantling so much of our stuff if we weren't around, with the hope that humans, that we would see, wow, look how beautiful it could be. Look how the world would go back to the way, you know, it was when I was a kid, or even better, you know, if we weren't messing it up so much. And then think of, there's got to be a way that we can stick around for that. Well, at the end, I pose an interesting fact. Now, nowhere in this book do I preach, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's been widely accepted across the political spectrum, because I don't tell people what to think. I interviewed fascinating, knowledgeable people all over who just gave facts that readers can draw their own conclusions from. But at the end, I pose this one fact, which is every 4 days, there are a million more human beings on the planet. And, you know, any six-year-old kid doing a story problem can tell you this doesn't compute. This is not a sustainable figure. I mean, at a certain point, we are pressing our resource base to the hilt, and technology can only extend it so far without us starting to poison ourselves, you know, with pesticides or just because of the amount of carbon that we are contributing to the atmosphere. You know, I don't have to draw these conclusions for you. Everybody knows this stuff. So at the end, I pose another little thought experiment. Suppose we did stay on the planet, but suppose we tried what the Chinese have tried, and it's an uncomfortable it's an uncomfortable scenario. But I just wanted to know mathematically what would happen if the whole world, starting tomorrow, only had one child per family. And I found some demographers in population institutes and science institutes in Austria who ran the numbers for me, and we were all really surprised at what we came up with. Let's look at it this way. At the end of the 19th century, there were 1.6 billion people on the planet. At the end of this past century, 6.6 billion people on the planet. By the middle of our current century, if we keep going the way we're going, or growing the way we're growing, there's going to be 9 billion people. And already we're having so many problems. So, I mean, this doesn't seem sustainable. But if we, starting tomorrow, all only had one child per family, just through attrition, within a century, we'd be back down to 1.6 billion people. And that would leave a lot of room on the planet for us to do the things that we like to do and yet let other species have room to, you know, we wouldn't be crowding them literally off the face of the earth as we are right now. Now, would this be easy to do? Obviously not. The Chinese have showed some of the problems with it. I mean, there's discrimination against girl babies. Right now they got 37 million more males than females over there, and that's going to be a big social problem eventually will get evened out.
And a recipe for international war.
Well, definitely, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so those are problems. You know, people find their way to sneak around it, and obviously passion sometimes can trump policy, and an extra pregnancy takes place. But you know, the Chinese have brought down their growth rate. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, closing the barn door after the horses have gone, gone wild. But still, I mean, I think that given all the environmental pressures on this planet right now, which we're all starting to admit, you know, that this is something that unites us all, that we've all got to solve, I think population management is something that we have to consider as part of the mix. I mean, think of it this way. Corporations are often told by the same economists who are talking about growth, growth, growth all the time, which is clearly unsustainable eventually. But corporations are often told by these economists, you know, to be healthy, you got to be lean. So they are being told, you know, to cut back on excess, get rid of the fat. So on a Monday morning, you know, you show up and 20% of the workforce is handed a pink slip, which is very brutal. Unless it's a humane corporation, and then they just let attrition do it. As employees retire or pass on,
right,
they hire fewer people to take their place. And year by year, the corporation comes down to a healthy, sustainable size. Well, I think that's a scenario for the Earth that we could consider. Because every population of every species in biological history that has ever outgrown its resource base suffers a population crash. So either we're going to manage that gracefully ourselves through attrition and gradually get healthy, or nature's just going to do it for us. And when nature hands out pink slips, it's not pretty. There are droughts, there are famines, there are resource wars, or in the case of nature not liking us, clearing away a biodiverse prairie that we used to have and planting this monoculture of corn and then figuring ways to live off of it, we start dying from things like obesity and diabetes from, you know, eating corn syrup all the time. So, I mean, I think that the future is going to have fewer human beings in it because I think that we have grown too big for a healthy planet. And this planet will bring itself back to health eventually. I would like to see us take some control of it because I think we deserve to be here as much as any other species. I mean, you know, we have created beautiful things on this planet. We are fascinating, but we've just sort of overgrown our space, and that just isn't going to last. And I'm finding remarkable consensus on that opinion from all kinds of political and religious groups who I've been asked to speak to.
Well, I tossed a coin while you were talking to decide which one of my two kids would have to go, Itchy or Scratchy, and tough luck, Itchy.
Well, like I said, it's an uncomfortable it's an uncomfortable premise. Hell, I'm the second child in my family. You
know? I made the adjustment right away. I just want to say I was right on board with it. So Itchy is immediately sold for medical experiments, and we'll just move on. Let's go east of the Rockies. Tom is waiting to talk with Alan Weissman, author of The World Without Us. Tom?
Yes, Ian, how are you doing?
Couldn't be better. Go ahead and ask
away. Right. Let me talk to Alan here for a minute. First of all, his premise is faulty because there's a number of mammals on this planet, all right, from mice all the way up to human beings. And the first thing is, who are more adaptive? Humans. Can you imagine a rabbit digging a hole in the ground and then lining it with lead to protect himself from cosmic radiation? Is stupid.
Well, okay, but the premise of the book is just the world without us. It's just...
Well, how would that possibly happen, sir?
Well, it's really not all that important for the premise.
No.
I theoretically pose some ways that we might suddenly disappear, but they are remote possibilities.
No, your premise, as I understand it, is that there'll be too many people on the planet, and then we'll be hungry, and we'll die off.
Well, a lot of us will die off. That's already going to happen. There are countries in Africa that bear this out at the moment.
Well, let me ask you, would it be one more rabbit, one more pheasant, one more turkey, one more cow, one more bison left before we go? It's stupid.
Okay. Well, you registered your thought on that. Let's move on. Let's get west of the Rockies where it's Blake on Coast to Coast AM for Alan Weissman. Blake?
Hi, I've got a question for you that's kind of two-pronged, and they're both related. And so I'd like to start off with this part of the question. Earlier on, you were talking about how you had visited places like Chernobyl and places that were severely contaminated, but still life has found a way to flourish there under adverse circumstances, correct?
That's correct, though it's not necessarily the life that was there before it got contaminated or eroded.
Right, right. So basically, my question about that is, does that not, in theory, just kind of contradict the kind of alarmist environmentalist view that, you know, humans are going to destroy the planet if we continue to drive SUVs or something because we're contaminating the planet that, to an extent that will be completely irreparable?
No, that's a really good question. And in essence, you're absolutely right, because frankly, you know, the planet is going to do just fine. It has gone through even worse disasters than the one that we're perpetrating right now on so many species. I mentioned the Permian extinction, which wiped out 90% of all living things on Earth. And, you know, this is pretty bleak, but gradually, you know, stuff crawled out of the ocean. There was only one vertebrate left. It was this little toothed worm that things started generating again, and a few million years later, we got an age of dinosaurs, which was pretty impressive, and that lasted for an awful long time until an asteroid hit the planet, and then they died back, and then we got this age of mammals. My point is that life will go on, but it won't necessarily be the same life that you and I know and cherish. You know, our beautiful forests, our amber waves of grain, our prairies, and ourselves, and I am Homo sapiens specific enough myself that I would kind of like to preserve the world, not only as I know it, that I think is a really beautiful place with our northern forests and our tropical forests, etc., but also the world that I know that we depend on. At a certain point, if we wipe out too many more species, we're going to wipe out something that we really depend on, and suddenly we're gone as well. Wow. And I'm not ready for that to happen.
Blake, does that answer that?
No, not yet. There's a second part of the question that pertains to the earlier part. The second part is, in terms of, I remember you mentioning earlier that, you know, there might be a chance that we were the losers in the battle between the apes and what we became in terms of running out into the savannas and finding a different way to live. In terms of evolution and that playing a part in this, how do we explain the Cambrian explosion in the fossil record and the fact that there is no transitionary fossil between a precursor species and us in the Cambrian explosion, we all just kind of show up. And it's kind of like a newsflash as far as fossil records go. So in terms of that, if we all show up at the same time and we as Homo sapiens are already running the planet, how do we then assume that there's a possibility that we might not run the planet?
Well, you know, the origin of life on this planet is still a mystery that no one can explain. No scientist can explain it. They're searching for it, and you know, to me, it's a delicious mystery that may never get solved, and I don't care. I think that maybe some things we're not supposed to solve. We're just supposed to deepen these mysteries and enjoy them. But, you know, the link to what developed, according to evolutionary biologists, eventually developed into Homo sapiens has not been discovered, partly because, you know, we evolved in the tropics, and you just don't find a lot of fossils in the tropics, particularly of things like chimpanzees and all that, because in wet climates, they don't last very long. You know,
I think that's good enough. I think that's a really good answer, and I'll just say the rest of it. You either got to accept the premise of the book, or you don't.
I did ask religious leaders, though, who believe that this world was created for human beings, and without human beings, there would be no world. You know, about this question, because I know a lot of my readers who are believers would think that, you know, something was missing if that question wasn't raised. And, you know, the answers were varied, but one of the things that really impressed me was that so many fundamentalists, including fundamentalist Christians and fundamentalist Muslims, had a remarkably similar answer, also a Buddhist monk, which was that, you know, we shouldn't take the fact that we believe the world will end and it doesn't matter as reason to trash the earth. Just the same way that we try to keep our bodies pure as channels for prayer and our temples and churches, you know, as beautiful as possible to welcome God, our planet should be the way that God made it, and we should keep it as clean as, you know, as holy as possible, treat it as a holy object that God created. And, you know, the world's going to end, but we don't know when that's going to be. Only God knows. And I loved that answer, and I was surprised that I heard it from so many different religions.
I think that's good. And if we have time, let's grab Jason, but both Jason and Alan would have to promise to be fast. Jason is in Virginia on Coast to Coast AM. Jason?
Sure, real quick. Great show, by the way. I just want to ask, what's the best location on Earth to be if you're the last person on Earth to survive?
I love it.
Wow. Boy, you know, there's no place like home. So I think that every human being should find the place that means home to himself. Me, I'm happy being in the mountains of Western Massachusetts, but wherever you are, I hope you love it as much as I love my home.
There you go. And I will say your home state of Minnesota with all of its natural resources would welcome you home, too.
Oh, so. It's a beautiful place. I love going back there. I was back there for some book signings this fall, and it just melted my heart to be there.
Yeah. Well, very good. Hey, thank you so much for the extra time. It's a fascinating thought, and it's one that will stay with me for a long time. So I appreciate the book, The World Without Us. Alan Weissman, have a terrific holiday, and thank you so much for getting us started thinking about 2008 with maybe a slightly different lens.
Well, thank you. Best holiday wishes. Thanks for having me on your air.
God bless you. All right. So then coming up, then, let's do open lines. We'll give you the same numbers we just gave out here, but this time, do you take it in whatever direction you want to go for the rest of tonight? In for George Norrie, open lines. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. Love rocking these live nights where we're taking nothing but your calls on Coast to Coast AM. It's just going to be open lines for the rest of the night. We'll find out where you're going to take us coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George, this is Ian. You can either go back to the last conversation if you want to, or just take us an entirely new one. Let's go with wildcard line. Sean is in Toronto on Coast to Coast AM for open lines. Sean, get us started off right.
Hi, Ian. I was perusing your blog, and I came across something that I felt compelled to call in and speak to you about next time you came online. You had something about brainwaves and a study that someone was doing with regards to how they slow down, or seem to slow down, actually. What happens is that the brain speeds up in moments of intense trauma.
Right. It was an attempt to try to explain why time seems to slow down when we experience it. What happens physiologically that explains that seeming shift into what almost feels like a different dimension while it's going on? Right.
Exactly. Now, when I read this, my jaw dropped simply because I've experienced this. Most of the time when I hear stuff on the show about chupacabras, et cetera, you know, Bigfoots, I've never experienced any of it. So I just, you know, as a skeptic, I just brush it all off. Reading this, my jaw dropped, and I said, you know what, this happened to me, so I want to tell you about it. Now, it was 2004, and it was about 3-4 inches of snow on the ground, and it was just, it had been snowing for about an hour, so the plows hadn't been out yet. I was going to Toronto. I'm in a little city, Mississauga, outside of Toronto. I was driving in to drop my uncle off. He drives taxi there. Now, we were going there, and we were on this road, and it was black ice everywhere with the snow on top of it. And this Honda is coming towards us in the opposite lane. There was no island in between. And the guy starts to swerve, and he starts coming to, like, his vehicle starts coming towards me. And I swear to you, it all happened, what I'm about to tell you, within a lapse of 2.5 to 3 seconds. But it felt like 30 seconds to 45 seconds. And this is what happened. So he's coming at me. His car is at, like, a 45-degree angle. I stop. I immediately remember hearing an OPP officer, Ontario Provincial Police officer, telling us that you should look in the direction that you want to turn into. You should, he was just all the tips that I had. I turned my vehicle. I started thinking, okay, in order to avoid this guy, I have to turn my vehicle at the exact same angle as him. My adrenaline was just so fast. I just had time to react, and I even had time after I had positioned my vehicle, and I'm skidding towards him now, and he's skidding towards me. I even had time to look him in the eyes, and we both kind of looked at each other like, okay, well, it was nice knowing the world, you know, because we were both coming at each other really fast. And what happened was, I'm pretty much yelling on top of my lungs. My uncle's like, calm down, calm down. Like I said, this was all over a matter of 2 seconds, but everything just slowed right down. And anyways, we stopped 2 inches short of each other. So he just drove away like nothing even happened.
That's very interesting, and that is not surprising. I hear the same thing from even from football players. So in a non-life-threatening situation where they can be, it's just like almost you'd expect something to go in slow motion. They can see somebody coming. They know they're going to get crunched, and time seems to slow down for just those few seconds, and it's almost like their brain adds extra time to decide, go left, go right, take a dive, go out of bounds. And so they say that it's very much like being in an accident. I've heard that from a couple of people I know who play college or professional football over the years.
That's so amazing.
Interesting. Thank you. And by the way, Sean, I would push you on when you said chupacabras, and you said you're a skeptic, so you brush it off.
Yes.
I'm sure you know where I'm going with this, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but a cynic brushes it off.
Okay.
A skeptic considers it. Doesn't have to be true, but that's where I like to be in that, as a skeptic frequently on topics like that, and I try to avoid being a cynic wherever possible. Wildcard line, let's get to Sarah. She's in New York City on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines, Sarah, where are you going to take us?
Well, I think this will be very entertaining for you. I have a sound clip of you speaking reverse speech. I'd heard about reverse speech, and I'll just briefly explain it so people know what it is. There are scientists who now think that this is for real, that when you say something forward, not all the time, but in speaking forward, that the brain has the ability to choose words or sounds within the words such that when you reverse the thing, you can be saying totally intelligible sentences that are more coming from your subconscious a bit. But anyway, I wondered about it, and I figured that I would I would reverse a clip, a little sound clip of when John Jefferson was on with the Body Farm.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I like that show a lot.
Well, I called in regarding my skin parasite condition.
I have thought of you many times. You told the story about the worms, the parasites that you picked up, and that the body farm was trying to help you in overcoming your condition, that you were the one that's being followed by flies?
Right. Well, yes. And it turns out, I thought, from my investigations into reverse speech, what really interested me was not to hear what my subconscious had to say about me, you know, talking about parasites. I didn't really want to hear what I had to think subconsciously, like, oh, you're really afraid of them. I'm very connected to my subconscious. But what I wondered from the research that I started to do, it looks like some of the information that you'll end up saying, if you listen backwards, will not be information that is from your knowledge base or from your subconscious per se, but actual information that you would never, ever know anything about, like, you know, you're speaking to somebody who thinks they're going to go to jail for, you know, IRS problems, and their wife may go or their daughter might go for being involved. And the guy ends up saying, you listen reverse, and he says, the girl gets free, and she ends up not going to jail. But he does things like that, that, you know, practical information that seems more out of kind of psychic or just picking up kind of things from the cosmic internet information that you wouldn't know about. So anyway, I reversed this clip, and it's about, you know, it's a few minutes long. I listen to the whole thing in reverse. You say nothing in reverse. I say nothing in reverse. But John Jefferson speaks up a storm. And I sent the clip of him talking reverse, and he was like, oh my God, you know. I've selected out two sentences that are back to back, and that gives a little more credibility too, is that there's two sentences that relate to each other back to back. I mean, you know, right next to each other. There's within a 30 seconds of him talking, he says quite a lot. He says, okay, in the beginning, he says it's very dramatic, quite clearly. Later on, he says, terrible substance in them, has all the toxins in it. And that's what I want to play. And if people would write down, if they have a pen, terrible substance in them, because it's not perfect, but if you listen to it a few times, you'll go, oh, my God, he is saying terrible substance in them, has all the toxins in it.
All right. Well, let's hear the reversal, and I will, we'll listen for it here, and we'll be careful here. Just, again, we're identifying, this is Sarah playing back John Jefferson in reverse from a past show. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to play, it's only a couple seconds to say the two sentences, so I'm going to play them three times because you probably won't quite get it. It's a little weird. It can't be perfect.
Okay.
It's backwards. Okay. here we go.
All right. Listen as close as we can. And?
Oh, boy. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
Okay, I didn't have it queued up right, but
okay,
you might have heard it. Okay, here we go.
That's interesting.
You're going, ha, ha, and he's saying over you, terrible, he's saying toxins.
Interesting.
Anyway, I don't know if you all could have heard that. It's over the phone.
We could hear it, and of course, remember that the whole reversal subject is one that was one of, kind of a classic on Coast to Coast for
right.
many years. With a guy named John David Oates, who
right.
used to come on with his reversals. So I'm well familiar with him. It was interesting to hear that, and I appreciate you taking the time to try to make that as clear as possible. And I'm disappointed that there was nothing in my speech backward, because I was hoping at least I would be intelligible backward. So thank you, Sarah, and email that to me if you would, please, just so I can hear that again off the air. And thank you, Sarah. I'd love to hear from you. Let's go to the first-time caller line, where Donald is in Chesapeake, Virginia, on Coast to Coast AM. Donald?
Ian, I'm going to wish you a happy holidays before we get into this. But
thank
the
you.
Other day I was in a 7-Eleven somewhere, and it was in Yorktown, Virginia. And I'm reading in this magazine article, it's about five women, pregnant women with their bellies painted, you know, like in the time of Halloween. And then an article right down below that or to the left of it. I'm not sure if this is going to have to do with, you know, the getting rid of people on the face of the earth or whatever. But it's very disgusting that, you know, you read this article and people are going into the grave and pulling out corpses after they're dead and taking them to the hospital selling the body parts. And they're making $5,300 or $5,600.
Right, right.
I just, you know, it kind of upsets me that we go through these, you know, the whole periods of, you know, Christmas and people's birthdays, you know, life on the earth. And I see this, and then instead of them, now they're not killing or going into the grave. What they're doing actually is just going up to the people and killing them outright and taking them to the hospital and selling their body parts.
Right.
I mean, you know. I'm not sure if Alan is listening to this or not, but he might want to look into it and investigate it. It's like, I know George Norrie would not want to see this, and, you know, no,
I don't think anybody would. I mean, I think that that sort of thing has always existed. I mean, ever since medical science, we can go back not that far into the creation of med schools when they ran out of freshly interred corpses and turned to murder to meet the supply that was being demanded by these med schools. And that happened, you know, 150 years ago, and it's not terribly surprising it's happening all over again.
Well, I'm glad that you got me on, and, you know, I appreciate what you do because you're one of those that's right up there with George Norrie and Arthel and anybody
else, you know. It's nice.
You're very intelligible.
Thank you, Donald. I want you to hang on 1 second. Don't go anywhere, okay? Stay right there. Hey, Dan Galante, can you bring up Brad on the east of the Rockies line, too, at the same time we've got Donald on? Okay. Hey, Donald, you're calling from Chesapeake, Virginia, and so is Brad. Brad's the next caller. It's the first time I've ever had back-to-back callers from Chesapeake, Virginia. Brad, Donald, Donald, Brad. Do you know each other?
I can't say I do. How you doing, Brad?
Doing all right. Just getting off work.
There you go.
I'm at work getting ready to deliver some more gas.
Okay. There you go. Thanks, Donald. I appreciate that. Brad, where are you going to take us?
Well, you guys talked about the Mayan calendar the other day, and I'd heard some people say things about an extraterrestrial influence, you know, could possibly cause be the reason for the end of the calendar.
Right.
And I'd wondered, you know, one of your callers before said something about peace being, you know, possibly being end of it and brought on by extraterrestrial influence. Well, you know, I come from somewhat of a military background, and I studied a lot of history, and history kind of speaks for itself. I could see that happening. Warring factions don't normally become peaceful amongst each other when given an outside, you know, an outside aggressive influence, so would it not be possible then to say that some extraterrestrial influence would come here with an aggressive posture, and the people of Earth would band together and become peaceful amongst ourselves to expel the intruders?
Sure, I mean this is the beauty of all of the great science fiction novels of all time who have explored all of the potential themes for what would bring us to conflict like that.
You know, a lot of my colleagues are ex-military, and we kind of got into that conversation after you guys last, it was 2 days ago, and they said the same thing, and I figured maybe I'd call in and
appreciate that.
Throw the possibility up.
You know, the other possibility, just to go back to the Mayan calendar since we brought it up last hour, you know, we really don't know why it ends where it ends, and we insert a meaning to it, although they gave no significance to it. They didn't say, they didn't specify, you know, it just ends. And so we kind of philosophically, we put in our beliefs, it sort of becomes sort of a mirror topic. It becomes a mirror of ourselves. And I often wonder whether there could have been maybe they could have been at war themselves and just never got back to it, that they had every intention of starting another calendar, or that they didn't think of it as the end of the world as we know it, but rather just the end of an age, and they were going to start another age and do the whole time, just sort of chart out the world on that, you know, or maybe they got bored. I mean, we don't know for sure. So we'll be curious to see what happens 5 years from tonight. The countdown is on. In fact, I put that up on the blog. Just so you know, Brad, 1,825 shopping days left until the end of the world, according to the Mayan calendar. So take a look online. It's all linked up on the blog at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go west of the Rockies where Chuck is in Alaska on Coast to Coast AM. Chuck?
Good evening, Ian. I have a story. Today we welcomed our seventh daughter into our home.
Oh,
and she's a four-month-old little girl. All but two of our daughters are adopted, but it seems like we got involved in foster care and adopting, and just a series of just miracles that can't be coincidence has taken place. But how it came about, this daughter we've got is the sister of our 13-year-old. It's her biological sister, and we'd have no contact with the family other than we'd stop and see our daughter's birth grandmother in the store where she worked occasionally. But last year about this time, my grown married daughter, who has three little ones at that time, was in the store, and the 2-year-old started calling the checker by the name of our daughter. She, you know, who was 12 at the time, and my daughter asked her, you know, what her last name, and it turns out it's one of my daughter's aunts. And she said, wow. So she said, would you guys like to adopt another baby, your parents? Hmm. It didn't turn out, but it turns out that it all came about to this, us adopting this baby, and it's been a long process, but a series of just incredible, incredible miracles that would have happened that I just
couldn't. Oh, well, that's neat.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to mention, I think that whole population, overpopulation thing is a myth. You just need to come to Alaska. There's a Jesus flyover. We've got millions and millions of acres. But
lots of places. There's one of the fastest growing, semi-metropolitan areas is in, I think it's South Dakota. Where they're just, population is sort of booming. The real estate prices are going up, and it's hard to get houses in certain communities. So you're right. It depends where you are.
Well, there's a whole element of belief system that the earth is this living, breathing thing, and that, you know, the people are cancer. And you listen to some of the other guests that talk about the elites that want to eliminate a lot of people. And it's just basically a conflict of religious viewpoints that I believe we were put here and the earth was designed for us. And that that your last guest said, that a true Christian or somebody who's strong religious and has strong moral values, you know, it's imperative to take care of the earth and, you know, treat it as something that was made for us, just like you would a sacred temple. And I think the people who are doing the damage are people who are maybe secularists or people who are just involved with,
I don't know.
Major there's corporations.
There's a lot of people who would take a sense of manifest destiny as an entitlement to do whatever they felt like. And I would say that it doesn't fall down along secular or faithful lines, but we'll leave that conversation there. And I want to go back to something you said just real quickly. And thank you so much for your comment, taking on foster kids and adopting children. If you can't bring one into your home, go to coasttocoastam.com and follow George Norrie's prompt to adopt a kid internationally and send money to support that child in their home. If you're looking for an end-of-the-year charity to support, click on to coasttocoastam.com and find out more about helping children and read George Norrie's notes on that online. And then we'll get back to more open lines coming up next hour. In for George, this is Ian on Coast to Coast AM.